pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, I'm drinking scotch. Surprise, surprise. This time it is another birthday scotch, which is the Cask of Dreams Glenfiddich Canadian Edition 2012. So, I mean, it's not like it's super old. Actually, I don't think I've actually taken a look to see when this particular one was bottled. But, hey, we're going to find out how it tastes. I have yet to have it. What are you drinking?
I was going to say, but it's a Cask of Dreams.
It is a Cask of Dreams, so if I am not inadequately pleasuring a woman whose face I cannot easily make out, it's clearly not a dream that I've ever had. See, I'm one of those people where, like, I'll have dreams where, like, like, it's just like, oh yeah, in my dreams I fuck all the girls. It's like, no, in my dreams the girls want to fuck me. Like, that's the weird thing, is they are throwing the pussy at me, and in my dreams I'm just like, whoa, bitch, I'm married happily, thank you. And, like, that's what happens. And it's never like, the zombie apocalypse has come and all my family is dead and all the women want this dick. But, like, no, it's always just like, sorry, you see the ring on it? Back up, ho. And I don't know why that happens in my dreams, because I'll wake up and I'll just be like, God damn it, what the fuck am I doing?
The fuck is wrong with me, sleep me?
It's just, it is frustrating. Gin and ginger ale, I'm assuming?
Yes, sir.
There you go. All right, so you are listening to Jaded Gamercast. It is slow. It is a slow, slow time of year, as we all know. We say it every December.
I think the last 6 months, GW spoiled us, at least up until Dark Elves. I mean, after Dark Elves, they decided...
The last year they've spoiled
to
us.
...to turn off the faucet, so to right? speak. But man, yeah, like, it's just like, I remember, like, last year, like, you just be like... It's like 3 months in between releases from Games Workshop, and it's just like you are scraping the bottom of the barrel. So even though it feels slow, we have had leaner times.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Good, bad? Is it from a cask of dreams?
Oh.
Ladies and gentlemen, Lang has arrived.
No, it's so strong.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I'm.
That you is, know, at sorry, least I have your to, love. Okay, go.
Oh, Glenfiddich. Why? Why is this happening? All right, I'll have to put that on. Maybe sip a little bit more, and I'll probably end up having to put it on some ice because, Jesus Christ, that is strong.
See, I was gonna say, if you'll allow me to actually go for a highbrow literature joke now.
I mean, by all means, how many
people are going to get it? But
at least you have to ask.
All right. At least I know that if I ever need to kill you, I can always just pull an Edgar Allan Poe and just tell you that I have like a cask of some sort of scotch, and you'll just follow me into a deep dungeon.
It's possible.
You know. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, I'll keep that in the back pocket, especially when you're talking about the Cask of Dreams. I was just flashing back to fucking first year university English lit with the Cask of Amontillado.
It's like, Jesus. Bit more the Cask of Nightmares after that first drink. thanks, Matt. Appreciate
it. So the Cask of Pussies? Is that what they're trying to do? Like, or is it just the whole point is to call anyone that can't live the dream a pussy? Like, I'm not sure where it's going.
I went a little easier on the second sip. Better. Better, actually. It's actually got a decent caramel kind of flavor to it. So, but yeah, that's young. That is a young scotch.
Mm.
Woo! Jaded Gamercast. we talked a little bit about our 3 year anniversary, and we keep talking about trying to get a date together. I don't know what it's been going on. We're trying to get so much stuff done right now that we can't actually get anything done, oddly as it sounds. But Nathan and I have decided that our 3 year anniversary will take place on New Year's. It's going to be a New Year's Eve party. Drink and get drunk with Jaded Gamercast live cast and then live riff of the Ultramarines movie. So stay tuned for further details, but we'll likely be doing a Google Hangout and we'll be going from there, man. So it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually a little bit looking forward to watching Ultramarines the movie again, because it's going to happen after the live cast, and I may just be drunk enough to not realize how shit that movie is.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, I'll have to get, like, blind, like, episode 100 drunk during the live cast for that movie to not be shit, but we'll play it by ear.
Let's you're going
to
drink peach? Is that what you're saying?
Go fuck your goofball self.
I'll destroy everything you love. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. For me, it was nothing. I was super sick. I had food poisoning. My son had food poisoning. And that was like on my birthday and like the day that we were doing Star Trek and stuff like that. So like literally like right after we recorded the podcast, like the next day I get food poisoning. So I don't know what it was. It might not even have been food poisoning. But yeah, I didn't do any hobbying shit at all. I finally finished Galaxy in Flames. What was it? The second Horus Heresy book.
Oh, I think that is Galaxy.
Galaxy in Flames. There you go. Yeah. I finally finished that. I was just like, yeah. Oh, it took me like 6 years to finish
it. Only like 29 more and you're good to go. No, honestly,
my way through it. That one was just a crawl.
Yeah, Ben Counter is not great.
No. It wasn't that one.
That was the Graham McNeil one?
It was the Graham McNeil one.
I know Dan Abnett started it.
Yeah, it was. And then I'm just starting the Ben Counter one.
Yeah, the ghost written by.
Sure.
One. No, like I said, honestly, for all of the hype surrounding the first three books in the Horus Heresy, I do find them to be some of the weakest work. I think a lot of the better books have come out since.
Yeah, well,
anything Aaron Dembski Bowden has written for the Horus Heresy, be it Butcher's Nails, the audio drama, Betrayer, or First Heretic is.
I've read Betrayer. Right.
Yes.
When it was looking like we were going to have him on the show, and it just turned out that wasn't going to be the case.
And then he just stopped returning calls.
We even sent him like drunk texts, and he stopped.
Yeah, like I thought we had something. I mean, let's be honest.
The way it goes sometimes.
There's a wink, sometimes
for it.
And our hands would just like touch, and we like look each other in the eye, and kind of hold it for just a second too long. So I thought there was something there, but. You know, clearly Aaron decided that, like, look, he's a married man. He has dreams where he's like, look, back off, Nathan. I'm married.
You're just going to keep going. You're going to run that.
I will go until you
interrupt. You're going to run that into the end zone, aren't you?
And then I'll do a poor touchdown dance where I fall down.
And what about you for hobby?
I, too, have done nothing this week. This has been a really weird week for me. It's supposed to be my derby off season, and so everyone's decided to like shit all over the place and make me do stuff, and I hate it. Including the meeting I have tomorrow night, and bullshit. So no, I've done nothing hobby, which is unfortunate. I am looking at maybe starting a new fantasy army, but I always am.
You always are. You're always looking at starting a new army. Is it Empire this time? Is that why you sent me a list?
Empire or Bretonnia? We'll see. A little background on the why I'm thinking of starting it has nothing to do with now, but the contract that I'm on right now is going to have me traveling for about 5 days a week, every week for about 9 weeks in a row. And so that's why I'm just like, well, fuck, if I'm in like Fort Mac, Regina, all of these terrible, terrible places with nothing to do, I may as well work on a new army. Because what else is there to do in these terrible shithole of towns? So,
right.
That's why I'm kind of looking at it where I'm like, well, I could start a new army because I get like a good 3 hours a night of painting on it. Maybe.
All right. Well, so let's get on to the weekly listener poll question from this last week. This was a very simple one. What video game would you like to see Lang and Nathan play next? The resounding winner was Worms. Worms of some sort. We had a couple votes for Return to Minecraft, a couple votes for Space Hulk, and a couple votes for StarCraft, but very clearly, people wanted to see us play Worms. And there was a comment on the poll, not the website, for some weird fucking reason. And Daryl says, Worms! The drunken trash talk will be epic. You guys should also consider the survival mode of Dawn of War 2. See how many waves you can last through. Well, I think maybe
it's possible.
We can think about Dawn of War.
I was going to say, I actually have Dawn of War 2 on my Steam right now.
Yeah, I mean, I could get it, whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's funny, too, because it's just like, you've played 12 hours, and I've played Payday 2, and it's like 168 right. hours.
Exactly.
Well, or see, even Civilization 5, where it's like 53 hours, so you're like, well.
Yeah, and you know, for me, it's even like, I looked at Space Hulk, and I watched the videos of the gameplay and stuff, and it's just like, so what is it? It's kind of like the board game, just roll dice and walk around. I'm like, I don't know how exciting that's going to be. I'm like, but if we're drunk, and I hate Blood Angels enough, and Tyranids enough, who knows what could happen. So, I don't know, maybe we'll think about Space Hulk sometime in the future, but yeah, Dawn of War also sounds like it could be some fun. But Worms is absolutely happening now, so Nathan and I will decide which version of Worms that we will be playing, and we will pick up Worms, and we will record some of that for you guys and post it. But I think at this point, that'll be 10 episodes solid of Payday is the end of Payday.
Yes.
We may do some more Payday videos in the future if they release some expansions or we end up playing it. But other than that, we're just playing. We're just having fun. If you guys want to come play with us, feel free to add us on Steam. But yeah, that's where that is. So yeah, thanks to everyone who voted. You can find our polls at jadedgamercast.com. We'll have another weekly listener poll question for you at the end of the show, if we remember. All right, so let's get on to the model of the week. Now, when Nathan said to me we should talk about Hobbit models, my reply was, but what are we going to say about Lord of the Rings models that we haven't fucking said 100 times over? We don't like the proportions. They look stupid. This, that, blah, 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 blah. And Nathan sends me the link and he goes, really, I can't think of anything that would be funny that we could talk about these fucking models. And then as soon as you zoom in and you take a look, it's just like, Jesus Christ. If you ever had an urge for 12 hobos in a barrel, in barrels, like, you know, I need these modeled. I need these fucking modeled instantly. Please, they need to be on the table for all of my river tables. Like, it's just, Oh my God. Like, I'm so baffled by, like, every single aspect of these models, especially the fact that, like, they do vaguely catch the likenesses, but they're just so fucking bad.
Oh, I mean, like, everything about this is just pure fucking genius for, you know, because it's just like, oh my God. Like, I'm wondering if this was a Games Workshop idea or if this was a Warner idea. Like, that's the thing where it's just like, no, you need to make models of hobos and barrels.
I don't know.
But I mean, like, like I said, the reason I think everything about it is genius is, first of all, the price tag, $80 to get to get 16 half models. Okay, let's be honest, you do not have a full model anywhere in this kit because they are all hiding in their barrels. Actually, sorry, that's not true. Bilbo is sitting on top of his barrel, so you have 15 half models with one full model. And then a lot of wood grain. I hope you like painting wood grain.
Keep talking.
All right, sure. So, like I said, you got $80, which is a whole fucking... Wow, all right. And then Lang knocks his microphone over, which is hilarious. But then the background... Now, in fairness, I don't know if this is true or not, but apparently you can only use these models for one scenario. There is one scenario, which I have to imagine has something to do with the top paragraph of it, of the Dwarves of Thorin's company make good their escape from the dungeons of Thranduil. So I'm assuming there's one single scenario in the rulebook that you can shell out $80, so that way you can get these bullshit in-barrel models. And good Lord, like, it's just like, I don't even know where to start. Because like I said, you know, they give you a lot of 360s, or rather, you know, two 360s, but a lot of close-ups. So if you've ever wondered what, like, cut-off hands and, like, fucking weapons that lead to nothing would ever look like, you know, there it is. I mean, Jesus Christ, like, almost all of these models have one bit of them where it looks like the 3D printer just had an error and they said good enough. You know, look, in fact, actually, I'm looking at one where it looks like there's even a fingerprint in the paint and they just couldn't even be bothered to fix it.
Which one?
It is, if you scroll down, push the move right button, the first picture on the left, blow that bad boy up, and then take a look at the right barrel dead center above the rope. It actually looks like a fingerprint.
Yeah, it could be.
Or a grease spot or something. I mean, the wood grain is not going the way of all the rest of the wood grain on both of the barrels.
I think that's the least of our worries at this point. It's just, you know.
But seriously, like I said, it's just like you start going through them. This is actually, if you're looking at that picture, it's the only one where it doesn't have like weird cutoff hands, because you go to the one beside it, and now you've got like Johnny Redshirt Dwarf who's just missing a hand because I guess it should be in the water, maybe. Well, it's but it's like, just lazy sculpting.
Yes, well, it's like those comic book artists who can draw like musculature and they can draw everything else that goes with it. But they just, for some reason, can't draw feet. So, like, you'll see them do, like, covers, and just everyone's feet will be obscured by various things because it's easier to just put things in the foreground than actually draw feet. Mm-hmm. You know, and they'll do, like, they'll do a comic where it's just, like, Power Man and Iron Fist, and just Iron Fist never kicks. You know, because it's, like, feet are too hard to draw. It really feels that way with this, where it's just a lot of, you know, it's a lot of just, yeah, you know what? Fingers are hard to draw. Hands are hard to draw. Let's not do feet. You know, let's not do this. Mm-hmm. It's very weird and silly and stupid. And the models look ridiculous. I mean, Bilbo looks like a goddamn meth addict. You know what I mean? Like, it just looks so bad. Well, and
that's the funny thing is, like, I mean,
I've switched to beer, by the way.
Oh, I heard. I was going to say, we have seen what the heavy metal team can do. Mm-hmm. And to me, even when I look at these models where the sculpts were easily phoned in, the paint jobs were just as much. Like, honestly, I've never seen faces done so poorly by the heavy metal team. And I challenge you to find something that looks creepier or more poorly painted than these faces do. Because, I mean, like I said, you know, you go through all of the fantasy releases, you go through 40K releases, hell, even like helmetless space marines are painted like phenomenally. And then these, yeah, you're right. It just looks like, all right, we got sunken cheeks, you know, got crazy cross eyes. Like,
it's bad. It's bad top to bottom.
Every last bit of it. So, I mean,
it's 100% Cask of Dreams, if you ask me. That's the barrel we're floating in, or the Cask of Dreams. No, you know what? It might be an okay scotch, but man, I'm not feeling it. It is just super friggin' strong and sharp, and like I'm not getting the flavor that I would expect. That's unfortunate. Ah, well. Beer it is, which also Maddie got me.
So, all right. Hey,
beer.
Beer it is.
Beer.
No, but I mean, like, honestly, these are the most ridiculous of the Lord of the Rings models. Not going into any of the rest of them, but like even the proportions for Lord of the Rings models look a bit off.
Yeah, well,
the rest of them. I don't want to go into,
right? Where like Legolas looks like he's wearing football pads, and you know, like the elves are all in like these really weird, like, you know, dancing poses. You know, they all look like they've just all got out of the ballet.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like it's none of it's working for me at all. There's a couple that I think stand out as being pretty nice looking, but for the most part, it's all kind of it's meh. I don't care about Lord of the Rings, so it's hard to make me excited about anything about that.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get on to the main topic for today's show. We kind of talked about last week, we know that we're going to be getting Firestorm Armada Edition 2 very soon here. Spartan Games did something very cool. They went ahead and they released every single of the core fleets, fleet manuals, as a free PDF release available on their website. So if you're interested in how the stats have changed for these ships, you know, what you can be looking at in terms of differences, you know, that's available to you, and you're going to be able to see it. So we're going to be talking about those a little bit, primarily because I have access to the MAR rules, so I can probably clarify some things for people as well. We have a lot to talk about with the second edition release of the book, but kind of going further than that, you know, we don't want to turn that into like a 3-hour show or balloon it into a 2-part or anything. I feel right now that we're going to have more than enough to talk about in one show with just talking about the core rule set. So let's talk a little bit about these fleets. Let's start off with the Directorate. Surprise, surprise. We're going to start off with the fleet that I play the most. But interestingly enough, and I've kind of said this before, it is the fleet that has changed the most. It was originally very similar to Terrans and a lot of other fleet types, where what you basically saw was a very simple, you know, port starboard weapons battery type fleet, not a whole lot of tricks. They just kind of had a high AP value and that was it. One of the main things to note when we first start looking at these fleet manuals is that the way that you build fleets, the whole maximum points value MPV that we had to do previously is gone. They do kind of talk about maximum fleet value, MFV, but they're more referring to three different types of fleets: patrol fleets, battle fleets, and grand fleets. Now, a patrol fleet is anything up to 800 points. A battle fleet is anything 800 to 1200 points, and a grand fleet is anything 1200 to 2000 points. What they basically are giving you then is what your minimums are and what your maximums are for every different ship type in that fleet. So if you look at a patrol fleet, you have to take a minimum of one of each squad. Pretty simple, right? I mean, you would expect that. You know, one medium, one large, one small. But in this case, they refer to it as tier one, tier two, tier three. So tier one is large, tier two is medium, tier three is small. Right? Pretty easy. When it starts getting interesting is when you start seeing the minimums that you have to throw into these fleets change. So when you look at the battle fleet value for Directorate at the battle fleet level, you must include two small tier three units. Between two and four is what's required for your fleet. So that's very interesting. And I mean, already that's throwing a huge change into the way that people have been playing this game. You know, Nathan, how many fleets do you see, you know, whether you're seeing guys in an event, you're just talking to guys who are building fleets where they're just like, oh yeah, well, I don't even like frigates. I take three. And then that's it. I just take three frigates and everything else is just, you know, cruisers and heavy cruisers and carriers and shit like that.
Oh yeah. Most people treat the frigates like the points fill, where it's just like, okay, I've taken my two battleships. I've got my carrier. I got two units of three, maybe even like, you know, three units of three. Medium-sized ships, I got 75 points left, bam, that's three frigates, I'm fucking done. And, like, that's usually how most people end up building their fleet, because they don't really look at them as adding a lot of value, you know, because you're like, but two frigates is the cost of one cruiser, and the cruiser is, like, better than two frigates, and they're that. So I do like the fact that they're straight up saying, if you're going to play a battle fleet size game, you need a minimum of two, you know, small ship squads, and escorts don't fucking count. Straight up. One question I did have looking at this chart, though, is if we're looking under battle fleets, even if we're going up to tier three, it says between two and four squadrons, and then it's up to three frigate squadrons. Does that mean that, you know, if I choose to max out on four, only three could be frigate squadrons? Or is that three count as one selection? So if I had three frigate squadrons, that's only meeting one?
Well, no. Basically, squadrons is that unit, right? So if you had like a squad of three, that would count as one squadron.
Gotcha. But yeah, so in that case with tier three, I could, you know, I can take two to four squadrons of them. But only three, up to three of them could be frigates, or up to two could be drones, or so on. So, again, I think that's really interesting, because even when you, like, obviously with the small ships, you're not really going to run into that so much. But even when you look at your tier one, where I could have three heavy ships, but only two of them could be battleships, only one can be a dreadnought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's the very interesting thing, where they're even limiting the types of choices that you can make to fill those points. So they're straight up, they're giving you the minimums, saying at minimum you need one heavy, one medium, and two smalls, but you can't just spam the shit out of everything, Matt Damon. You have to actually look at doing, oh my God, did that slip out?
It slipped out. Well, here's another interesting thing to note. What you'll notice between the patrol fleet and the battle fleet is that on a patrol fleet, it says up to one battle cruiser. So normally you would be able to take a squad of two to three battle cruisers in the Directorate, which is essentially like their heavy cruisers. But what they're basically saying here is that, no, if you're going to take a patrol fleet, you can't just, you know, dump all of your points into battle cruisers. Those count as tier one. However, in a battle fleet, you can have up to one battle cruiser squadron, right? So that's very interesting because that does kind of, you know, play a little bit with it. Now, we'll actually see it when we take a look at the squads and things like that, whether it's referring to something as an assault carrier or battle cruiser or things of that nature. But we also have stuff like battle stations and stuff that have been included in the rules, which was a big question mark, you know, but we'll talk about those kind of as we get to them. All right. So, let's go ahead and jump down here. We won't talk too much about the Grand Fleets and things of that nature. Mighty Armadas are basically anything larger than 2,000 points. What you basically start doing is you would say like, oh, you're playing 2,800? Yeah, you build a 2,000-point fleet, and then you build an 800-point patrol fleet, right? And they're like, yeah, and they count as two fleets, and they both have their own fleet admirals, and you follow the rules for both. So I found that to be very interesting. The rest of this stuff you guys have seen, you can kind of read it. I mean, a lot of this stuff doesn't make a ton of sense unless you have the context of the rule books. So I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about allied squadrons. When you actually see the statistics cards that come with these, oh no, they do have it here. So yeah, allies like Xenian League or things of that nature is very similar to what we saw before. They have different rules for how much you can put in there. What's interesting is that you have natural alliances for every one of these fleets. In this case for the Directorate, they are naturally allied with Works Raptor. What that means is you can actually take 50% of your fleet as Works Raptor, and you're also allowed to take Directorate-only tactical cards even though you have Works Raptor allied. Normally, if you were to say, like, take Directorate and ally in some Dindrenzi or something like that, you would only be able to take Xenian League-specific TAC cards as well as the generic TAC cards. So that's interesting. All right. So fleet tactics bonus for Directorate stays the same. They only get one. Command distance is 6. All right, so here we go. Right into it. Let's talk about the Dreadnought. The Dreadnought is 280 points base. Keep that in mind. Because one of the big things that have changed is that you have hard points and upgrades that you're able to buy for these ships now. And the hard points and the upgrades are pretty dramatic. You can do some very, very impressive stuff with all of your ships. By just, you know, upgrading a couple things here and there and really, really making it work to your advantage. But let's talk about the stats because this is where it's really, really, really changed for the Directorate. Nathan, what do you notice as the big change?
Damage rating 6 to me. I don't know if that's what your Dreadnought used to have, but that's...
It was really what it was before. I'm going to nudge you toward the weapons, good sir.
Okay, beam weapon of 10, 20, 30, 40 is big. It gives you bigger max range, although you're doing shit at max range. Starboard port, 4 fix. Yeah, you're not real.
Well, no, go ahead. Go above starboard. Anyways, I'm going to tell you. Turrets, they have lost their main weapon.
Yeah.
Before, what they had was a fixed forward gun with another fixed forward gun that you would link together that had the disruptor ability. And then they basically had the same thing in port and starboard. So they were a lot of big guns kind of split between two different racks. Now what they've done with the Directorate kind of as a whole is that virtually every single ship's primary weapon, like, and I don't mean primary as in primary according to the game rules, but like their main source of doing damage is a turret weapon. In this case, it's a beam turret. So yes, it has range bands of 10, 20, 30, and 40. As opposed to range bands of 8, it's range bands of 10. You get the beam cohesive ability, and because it's a turret, fire it in any direction, link it with any of your other guns. In this case, yeah, you know what? Like within 20 inches, you're rolling 14 dice. That's a ton of dice to begin with. I mean, unless you're trying to do like big time crit damage on, you know, like another Dreadnought, 14 dice is a ton of dice. When you look at the primary weapons being the port, starboard, and the fixed forward of 12, you know, suddenly you're adding 19 dice if you're linking fire in any arc. That's huge. That is a game changer for this model because the biggest problem with it before was that it took forever to turn this thing around. You could not get it. You could not bring its primary, like its main weapon to bear after those first couple of turns of combat because it just took you forever to turn around. You needed 3 whole turns just to actually be facing the stuff that you needed to shoot again. And if your opponent was savvy, you were never able to get into position. Now it's like, now you just need to get him into one of the three arcs and you're hitting him with full power every time. And that's really, really, really good.
Well, not to mention the fact that when you look at hard points, you can make this turn more. Because, I mean, like, honestly, you pay 10 points more, and now you're paying 290 points. That has movement 7 inches instead of 6, and a 1-inch turn limit, which is fucking huge, because now you're taking a ship that doesn't turn that well, and it is nimble. It is making, three turns? Like three actual turns every time it moves, like that allows you to just spin that bitch around and make sure he's always pointed where you need him to be.
Yeah, it does have one shield just like it did before. Turn limited 2 HP of 11, which is the same as it was. AP of 8 is the same. Point defense is the same. What you'll notice is that there's a really big mine number on a lot of these ships now. This has a mine rating of 8, and that is what you think it is. You drop a mine that does 8 dice worth of damage. Mines do a ton of damage now. Before it was like this thing, I think, had a mine rating of 6 before. And I would see like entire squads of cruisers or frigates most of the time just breeze through it like it was nothing. You know, now that you can actually also link mines together, you can really create some devastating mine explosions. It's pretty, pretty impressive. But yeah, let's talk about the Mars for this one. Elite Crew is one of the ones that we see on pretty much every single one of the dreadnoughts in the game at the moment. And why is this not scrolling down? Okay, there we go. And I'm just going to update this for you guys. A model with the Elite Crew receives a +1 to hit modifier on all dice rolls when taking command checks. When a squadron, rather than a particular model, takes a command check, unless all models within the squadron have this MAR, the effect is lost. Escort-type models ignore this are ignored for this purpose. This is interesting because Elite Crew before basically allowed you to hit on threes for boarding actions, right? So this is a huge shift. Elite Crew now is giving you an opportunity to essentially stay on top when it comes to command checks. I don't want to get too much into command checks at this point, but what you have to understand is that this game now takes leadership into account a lot more. And leadership kind of on the level of what you would see in like fantasy and 40K, a lot more similar. It's not like all these ships just always do what you want to do as long as they're on the table. Sometimes they fuck up, and sometimes they don't do what you want them to do because they're panicking or they're damaged or you know, they're not receiving orders appropriately. And they've added a whole section to the game just regarding command checks. And it actually has made command distance really, really important now, because when you're out of command distance, I mean, your ships they're thrown insanely into disarray. And when you've taken damage, you're taking command checks. So the fact that you're getting this bonus is really, really nice, because the manner in which that you're taking command checks is actually, it doesn't work in your favor. So getting the +1 is actually kind of making it work in your favor. Hmm. All right, so Impervious is another one that has changed quite a bit. Previously, Impervious meant that anytime somebody was going to come at you with a boarding assault, what happened was the number of dice that they would roll was halved. And that made dealing with star orders where you had to kill a star admiral in a boarding action a real pain in the ass if the guy had a dreadnought. It wasn't impossible. You just had to throw every last ship in your fleet at that ship in a boarding action to actually get it done. Which was a little bit strange because it just felt like, oh yeah, you can do it, and you probably will do it if you get even so much as a slightly lucky roll. But, you know, anyways. So the new rule for Impervious, and again, I'll throw this disclaimer out there for anybody who isn't aware. What I have is a beta version of the rules, so some of this stuff might change when the new rulebook comes out. We'll obviously be talking about it when that rulebook comes around. So just kind of take this with a grain of salt. Somebody disagrees with me on the internet. Hey, what's new? All right, so Impervious. To capture a model with Impervious, the boarding assault must roll successes equal to or in excess of triple the model's current crew points total. Boarding actions have changed a lot as well. Again, I'm not going to get into it, but in order to capture a ship, you have to double their current crew rating. So if with dreadnoughts, you have to triple it, and that's the difference. So again, not impossible. You can still lose a ship to a boarding action. It absolutely will happen. But in this case, you're not going to be able to capture a dreadnought and get those prize points for it. What do you think about that, Nathan?
I think that's a big deal because, I mean, we've talked, you and I have talked about the way the boarding actions are changing. And I think that the fact that you have to triple it makes it a really tough nut to crack. You know, you're not going to be able to just, if you're playing a boarding fleet, you're not going to be able to just zip up, throw your dice in, and know that you've captured it fair and square. And I think that's a really interesting change.
All right, so the last Mar that we're getting on this ship is Superior Design. If this model suffers a critical hit effect, the loss of any crew points is reduced by half, rounded down to a minimum of one. This model never gains a hazard marker as a result of a critical effect or a targeted strike. However, it can gain them from other sources. So targeted strikes and critical effects, like, yeah, they're going to give you hazard markers. Hazard markers have bad effects. Let's just leave it at that.
Mm.
So, again, it's making them very durable. They're going to stay on the table, and they're going to kind of keep doing what they're doing, which is really, really important. So, you know, what we're seeing with the Directorate Dreadnought here, you know, it's not really having anything stand out for it. Those three Mars in particular are pretty common to all Dreadnoughts. The one Mar that stands out is Reinforced 4, which means that the critical rating of the ship is increased by one if you are shooting at the ship's front, right? So this will actually have a crit rating of 14 if you are shooting at the front, which is absolutely insanely big. I mean, I have to laugh because
that is what she said. I mean,
there's very, very few things that are going to be able to deal with a crit rating of 14. That is massive. Most people aren't even going to be rolling 14 dice. You're looking for that exploding six to just
make bacon to get past
that.
Jason's going to get it every single time.
Every single time.
That's how he plans his strategy is. As long as I just roll tons of sixes, I'm in good shape.
Exactly. All right. So, yeah, let's talk about the hard points now. One of the things that you're going to focus on here is that it's going to tell you exactly how many you can take. And then in that hard point section underneath, it'll tell you how many you can take of that particular choice, right? So it says select up to three. You can take up to one shield. You can take up to two movement increase values, up to one turn limit reduction, up to one plus two AP increase, and you can take up to one option where you give your turret split fire, which is fine. I mean, I honestly don't mind split fire if you're going to use it. 7 and 7 linked with 12 on either side is only going to give you, you know, a couple of extra dice. But, you know, honestly, I think that's the one I'm really looking to skip. I could absolutely see the turn limit one, but for me, it's going to be shields, turn limit, and plus two AP. I think those ones are the way to go just because I think that they're absolutely keeping this thing durable. It already has a shield rating of 1. A shield rating of 2 is huge. It can really save your bacon, especially when we're talking about something that already is flying around with a crit rating of 14.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when I was looking at the available Mars there, I thought that legitimately the ones to take were shield, plus one move, and plus one turn, or minus one turn limit.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you're only looking at bumping it up to 305 points. And let's be honest, that's one frigate less that you're going to take.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, your shield rating's giving you better survivability and the increased movement as well as decreased turn limit means that you're always facing where you need to be. And like you said, with turrets being able to combine, with a more nimble ship like that, you will always be able to get someone in there to link with your turrets.
Yeah, no, very true. And again, even in the worst case scenario, you're firing 14 dice out your ass. Right. So, I mean, you're not ever really going to feel like this ship is doing nothing, which was exactly what it was doing in this last edition. So I love the changes to this as a Directorate player. I'm super amped to see this. The reason why I go with the plus two AP over the extra movement is specifically because when we get to the upgrades, you have the option to take the Special Forces Mar as well as the Second Assault Mar. So the Second Assault Mar means that you can actually make two boarding assaults with this Dreadnought per game. When you start looking at that being at 10 dice, that's crazy. Then when you actually look at the Special Forces Mar, it's even worse. So I'll go ahead and just pull up the Special Forces MAR here real quick. Where is it? God damn it. I fucking hate the way they laid out this PDF. It's probably up on the page I just went past. No, it's not. Where the fuck is it? Hold on. There it is. Sorry. Why wouldn't you put a space? Anyways. If all of the models initiating a boarding assault have the Special Forces MAR, their assault points dice receive a +1 to hit modifier. If a model with the Special Forces MAR is the target of a boarding assault, the assault point dice of the initiating models receive a -1 to hit. That means that they're going to have an even harder time boarding your dreadnought, and you're just going to be wrecking people. So what I like about this change is that previously Special Forces basically allowed you to have the option to make either you or your opponent reroll all of their dice from a boarding assault, which was super awesome. Like, it was really, really nice to have, but it was very, you know, sometimes you used it, sometimes you didn't. And because you only ever used it once per game, it kind of felt like, yeah, it's great to have it, I love it, but meh. Because this is defensive as well as offensive, I absolutely love it. I think for 10 points, it's a complete steal. And I mean, when you look at the fact that for 30 points, you can turn this thing into like a just this massacring boarding assault ship that is also turning out like ridiculous amounts of firepower, I think it's absolutely worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting here is that you also have some weapon upgrades. You can upgrade your primary weapons to have the Decimator Warheads. This is the one that I don't really go with. And you'll see Decimator Warheads a lot in the various fleet manuals. And like as we kind of go through these, it's going to take a while as we go through and we read the MARs. But what we'll start seeing is MARs showing up multiple times throughout various ships. So kind of the first times we hit them, we'll talk about them, but otherwise we won't. Okay, so Decimator Warheads is a coherence effect, meaning that if you link something else with that primary weapon, you lose the Decimator Warheads bonus, right? So you're taking it, and if you link with anything, you're losing it. That's the same thing with the beam turret on the main turret gun on here. So if all weapons are contributing to the attack have the Decimator Warhead, the attack causes a critical hit to the target, and the model is within 4 inches of it, it must roll a D3 on the bridge damage table in addition to any other effects. So the bridge damage table is one of the targeted strike tables. It has its own list of various effects, you know, where you're making them take command checks, or you're concussing the captain, or outright just killing the captain, right? Stuff like that, you know, a fire might start out or something. I think the problem with this is for 10 points, it's really situational, and it's not something I'm super keen on, you know, trying to really, really take advantage of in a fleet. What do you think, Nathan?
I agree. I mean, the fact that when you were going through the list of things where it's just like, okay, all of my shots have to have it, which means I'm not adding in my turrets.
No, you're rolling 12 dice.
Yeah, and that's ideally. Ideally, mm-hmm. I'm rolling 12 dice. And I have to be within 4 inches, which actually means I'm rolling 8 dice. And I have to crit. Like, come on, critting on 8 dice just to have the potential to fuck some shit up for 10 points?
Well, not to mention the fact that even when you're rolling a D3 on the bridge damage table, which is meant for a D6, you're only ever going to get the base conditional effects. And I believe on the bridge damage table or something like that, on a 1 or a 2, nothing happens. So, like, you have to roll a 3 in order to actually see something come from those Decimator Warheads.
The more you just kept reading it, the more I was just like, there are far too many caveats on here. And honestly, my dreadnought never wants to be 4 inches away, because that means that I cocked up my movement and I'm not in a good position. Because at 4 inches, I mean, my turrets are doing shit. All of my, you know, range band 1, my starboard port and 4 fixed are doing shit. You know, like I said, it's never somewhere I want to be, especially for, and let's even assume that 1, 2, or 3 on that D3 will do something. I'm still putting my ship in a terrible position. Even if I had 10 points left, I'd find something else on another ship. Yes. Like, I, you know, this isn't even the kind of upgrade where I would say, absolutely, let's do it. Like, if I'm a ship, and I don't even know if there is one, that is ideally suited to range band 1 fighting, and that's where I want to be, is I want to get into range band 1, and that is where my biggest damage is, by all means, take Decimator Warheads. Because that's where your ship will be anyway, so it's a nice to have. But here, right. I want to be sitting in that sweet, comfortable, like, you know, 12 to 16 inch range, because that's what's going to keep my beams in their range band 2 and all my primaries in their range band 2, and it's going to give me a lot of room to maneuver. That's my sweet
especially,
spot.
Especially when, for the exact same points upgrade cost, you can buy biohazard ammo for your beam turret. And, I mean, like, this is your go-to weapon to begin with, and all you have to do is do damage, and they lose a crew point. They just lose a crew point, right? That's huge, especially when you're building this thing to be, like, a boarding assault-type army, right? All right, so that's the Dreadnought. I promise the rest of these will go relatively faster. Let's talk about the Battleship. Battleship is basically a mini Dreadnought, and the reason why this is crazy is that it has virtually the same number of dice on its beam turret as the Dreadnought.
Yeah, it
you've
has
got 14 and 9.
Jesus.
And, like, that's crazy.
Yeah,
for almost
right,
for more than 100 points less, that beam weapon is causing that much more damage. What's awesome about this, a very similar rating as we saw in the previous game, but this one was given a shield. So it now has a shield like the Dreadnought does, which is super cool. It also has reinforced 4 and superior design, which is also very, very cool. What we're seeing is that the fixed forward weapon has a slightly different profile from the port and starboard, but the port and starboard is only torpedoes. That's very interesting. So basically what you've got is a turret, which is super strong, but you don't get that bonus port and starboard weaponry. All you're getting is port and starboard torpedoes. But it is that super awesome, same strength at all 4 range bands. And the changes to torpedoes is that torpedoes work in 12-inch range bands instead of 8. So they are super long range. So, I mean, you can basically shoot those torpedoes across the table if you decide you want to fly sideways, do it all gangsta style, which you can do with the Directorate. I mean, hey, why not?
Out the fucking window.
The only MAR that stands out here is you have the Countermeasures MAR. The Countermeasured MAR is basically if an enemy model is within 8 inches, they roll one additional, or they require one additional success to pass any command checks. That's pretty nice. Means it makes it very hard for them to get to do command checks if they're within 8 inches of you. But given the changes to range bands, that's pretty close. Like, you pretty much have to be on top of their heads for that to do anything. Very, very similar hardpoint upgrade options for this. The points are slightly different, but the big difference is that you actually have an option to take +2 wing capacity. So you can go from 1 wing capacity to 3. For 5 points, sure. It's like if you got 5 points and you have a hard point slot for free, you may as well do it. And you've already taken the turn limit. But yeah, +1 shield, +1 movement. You can take 2 of those, -1 turn, +2 AP. And then you actually can give the turret split fire MAR for free, which is really nice.
See, I think actually, the big thing, you can give the Dreadnought split fire for free as well, but I think the big thing is going to be the fact that you only have 3 hard points to choose from. It's not like your upgrades where you can take them all. And I think that anything with a 2-inch turn limit is going to take the -1, because for 5 points, you're stupid not to. And anything that has 1 shield is going to buy the 2nd shield. Because, again, you're kind of stupid not to. It's just such a great always there defense bonus, which could be the difference between, a hit and a crit, or even a hit and nothing. So it's just like, why would you not always stack those 2 on there? And then you look at it and you're just like, well, of the other hard points, you're only ever going to pick 1. And I think that's the only problem, because just like +2 AP is also pretty decent on this, because 8 AP with special forces, because that's an upgrade. Yep. We've discussed how special forces is great. So do you want to do that? Do you want 3 wings? You're really only going to get 1. Or do you want a split fire? Because split fire makes that that juicy 14 able to do some serious damage against smaller ships, which traditionally heavies like big ships struggle with.
Right. The other thing I wanted to point out for the Dreadnought, its base cost is 280. But if you take the bonus shield, the -1 term limit, the +2 AP, biohazard ammo, special forces, and second assault MAR, it's 340 points. So you can see we are seeing very simply here this option of taking stripped down ships. And as we start getting to the smaller stuff, you really start to see where just saving some points here and there is going to help you out, right? You start seeing how those points are piling up, because 60 points in this game is a cruiser. That's a lot of fucking points. You know what I mean? Like, and considering the fact that Dreadnoughts were basically 280 to begin with in the previous game, I mean, we're going to be seeing Dreadnoughts coming out here, just huge, huge points cost, just eating up a ton of the points in your list. I mean, if you want to take a Dreadnought in a patrol fleet, god damn, that's almost half your list in one ship. Mm-hmm. That's crazy talk. All right. So, yeah, that's the battleship there. You can give all the beam weapons biohazard ammo, just like the Dreadnought. What's interesting here is you can also give the torpedoes biohazard ammo or corrosive. Now, corrosive is something that we're going to see a lot on a lot of different ships. It's actually a really, really cool ability. Here's how it works. If all weapons contributing to the attack are corrosive and the attack exceeds the target's damage rating, the model gains a corrosive marker or corroded marker. A repair test must be made to remove each corroded marker that the model carries in the end phase of each turn. On a 4, 5, or a 6, the attempt succeeds and the marker is removed. On a 1, 2, or 3, the attempt fails, the marker remains, and the model loses a hull point. So it's 50-50 that 1 point of damage you did is worth 2.
Hmm.
Right? And that's what's really cool, is that you can have multiple corroded markers on a model, right? So if you just start stacking corroded models on them, he has to make a repair check for every single one of those. And every time he fails, it's another hull point. So corroded is one of those things that is, or corrosive is one of those things that's really, really game changing for certain fleets. Here, because it's only on torpedoes and you're only ever firing 6, I feel like you're much better off just skipping this, just using your torpedoes to do what you want them to do. You can also get special forces, which I think is absolutely great. 10 points is a steal. And yeah, that's what I would end up doing. All right, so moving on down here, we're going to start getting into the carriers. So the carrier that we see is very, very changed, which I love. I always bitched about my carriers to the Directorate, primarily because I felt like they were overpriced and they were undergunned and they just did not have enough wings that they could put on the table. It was an absolute pain in the ass. 125 points is the base cost. And what's interesting here is it doesn't have shields. It actually gets to cloak. Directorate are one of the few fleets that get to cloak. Basically, Directorate and Reloza and maybe a couple other ships here and there have cloaking. Cloaking has changed. What's awesome about cloaking now is that it's not just instead of a 4+, they need a 5+. It's that they have all of their attack dice. So it's like, oh, okay, so you're going to roll 20 dice? Yeah, you roll 10. You still hit me on 4s. Like, you're still hitting me on 4s. It's just you're rolling way less dice. I like that because it doesn't mean that this is like a get-out-of-jail-free card for long-range fighting. It just basically means that, yeah, you know what? Like, yeah, you're never going to have to deal with those mittfuls of dice. You're always going to be feeling pretty good about staying cloaked because it's basically a way of keeping yourself out of crit range, you know, out of that crit damage bubble, you know, where like, yeah, he might still crit you, but it's kind of more of a long shot. That's what I like about it. All right, so the carrier has the cloak, can take 6 wings, turn limit 2. Basically the same stats that we saw before. It's very similar to like a heavy cruiser, except they did give it an extra hull point, which I really, really do like. I think that that's a great upgrade for this guy. But what we do get now is forward, port, and starboard weaponry instead of fixed forward, which means that this thing does actually have some weaponry it can put on the table, and port and starboard torpedoes. Its fore, port, and starboard are also beam weapons, which is super nice. So you get that beam bonus as well. Countermeasures and reinforced fore for the Mars. Let's talk about the hard points. +1 to movement, +2 AP, +2 to wing capacity, +2 to command distance, which is very, very cool when you're dealing with wings. And you can change your beam weapon to a cyber warfare weapon. I'll talk to you about why that's really, really important kind of as we get to the rest of it. What do you think about the hard points for this, Nathan?
I found it interesting that they don't have the -1 move. This is your first big ship that doesn't have the -1 turn limit. But I do like the +2 wing capacity. And I'm working off of last edition rules though, because this would allow you to run 2 4-man wings essentially. So, you know, 2 different 4-man squadrons. And I think that that's finally getting to a, like, 4 is usually the minimum that I like to look at when I'm looking at wings. Because 3 never feels like enough. You're always,
yeah, I agree.
You're always with 3. You're always just like, god damn it. So when you're at 6, you basically just go, I take six of one, and that's all I'm doing. With the plus two, now you can split it four and four, and you're going to feel a little bit happier about it. Other than that, I think you're probably going to go with your command distance, if based on what you've been saying, how command is such a significant factor of the game now. I think you're going to want that.
Well, it's also interesting because you can put your Admiral on there, and that means your Admiral has this big bonus to command distance, which is actually really, really cool. I won't talk about the rules because I don't know what the final rules are. So kind of once we see it, we'll absolutely be talking about why putting Admirals on carriers is super cool. Upgrades. We see we have the same thing as before. You can give all the beam weapons biohazard ammo. You can give the torpedoes decimator warheads. 10 points each for those. Here's what's the super interesting change to carriers, and this is an interesting change pretty much across the board for every fleet. You can be, every single one of these capital ships has the option to be accompanied by either Directorate escorts or Xenian League escorts.
I didn't notice those before.
Pretty straightforward. The carriers now, you can give them the escorts from Directorate, you can give them escorts from Xenian League, or you can give them two cruiser escorts, 55 points each. That's the base cost of a cruiser. Or you can give them two Tormentor-class R&D cruisers for 60 points each. Now, R&D cruisers have that cyber warfare weapon as well, and they also can cloak. So the fact that you, for free, can use one of your hard points to upgrade your main weapon to a cyber warfare weapon is super interesting, because now you would have a squad of three cloaked cyber warfare ships that are basically just bombing away on ships from across the table with cyber warfare, you know, and launching wings at the same time while cloaked. Like, I just think it's super, super cool to do it. And that's absolutely what I'm doing. I'm telling you right now, I'm fucking doing that. I think it's such a cool upgrade. Cyber warfare, basically the way that it works is it doesn't do any damage to the ship, but it like causes crits and it causes like targeted strikes and things of that nature to happen. And like you don't get any defense against it, right? It's not like other secondary weapons like torpedoes where you get to like shoot them down with point defense. It's like, oh no, you fucking take damage. Sorry. Like that's basically what it comes down to. It's really, really cool. And you're doing the same thing as you would with any other gun. You're trying to beat the damage and the crit rating. But like you can really do some cool stuff with cyber warfare. All right, so I really like it. I think it's a cool change to the carrier and carriers in general. All right, so let's go down here. We're going to start actually talking about the battle stations now. All right, so this is the Firewall class battle station for the Directorate. I have one coming in the mail. It's 190 points, which is pretty pricey. I don't feel super happy about that, but to be honest with you, when you look at the stats, you know, 10 hull points, damage rating of 7, that's massive. With a crit rating of 11, lots of crew, lots of AP, you know, point defense of 7, it's really, really nice. You can't turn, but you don't have to because everything on it is turrets. You have two separate beam turrets. You've got a cyber warfare turret. You can add a second cyber warfare turret. And you have launch tubes, which means that you can make boarding assaults at like a longer distance than what you would normally be able to do. Boarding assaults now you can do at 6. I think launch tubes you're able to do them at 10 now, if I recall correctly. Countermeasures, no folding space drive, and maneuverable. Maneuverable means that even if it's not moving, you can still turn it if you want to turn it. Right? So even though it has a turn limit of 0 and it can only move 2 inches in a turn, you can still like rotate it however the fuck you want. It doesn't matter. Not that you would need to rotate it because the whole fucking thing is turrets anyways. What's sweet about this station is this station can cloak. I love that. I think that that's super cool. You can cloak it and just run like two cyber warfare attacks. I love it. I think it's great. Okay, so what's also interesting is you have two options for hard points. You can give them 1 point defense for free. So if you don't want to do any upgrades, you automatically go ahead and get yourself a point defense of 9, which is very big. But you can actually give this thing a total of 6 wings by taking both of those hard point upgrades for 5 points each to give you plus 3 wing capacity twice. That's a carrier, right? Like, that's really, really nice. And I think for 200 points, you know, a less mobile carrier with a ton of turrets is really cool. I think it's actually really nice.
But see, I think you're probably going to end up paying the 20 points to add the second Cyber Warfare turret rather than taking the six wings. Because the other thing you have to deal with is your command distance is not going to be equal to your carrier. Like, the wings are just really going to run away from you if you did
that. Yeah, well, so, there would be, again, it would be very, very defensive. You can give all the beam weapons biohazard ammo. I mean, we've seen this on every ship so far. Get used to the fact that it's going to probably be on every ship all the way down the line. And you can also give it special forces for 5 points. Again, great, great option. I think special forces and biohazard ammo is just such a great option. I love it. All right, so here's what I like about battle stations. Battle stations are kind of one of those things that you can just put in the middle of the table and just slowly move it up the table. Because it has beam weapons with range of 40 at range band 4, and you're still rolling a decent number of dice at range band 4, it's actually really, really cool. Keep in mind, you can't put escorts on it, you can't join squadrons, none of that kind of stuff, so you're never going to be linking fire unless you're linking fire with your own turrets, at which point you'd be rolling 15 dice. 15 dice, as we said, is a fair amount of dice, you know? So I don't feel like this is a huge waste of time, but I'm really interested to see how the fuck I would fit this into my fleet. Because at the moment, I have no idea how I would fit it into my fleet. I think it's kind of strange. I'm interested to see if missions, if there's certain missions that would like really, really benefit a battle station being on the table. I think the only other thing to note is that it does have two movement values. The first movement value is its normal movement, which means it can move two each turn. And then the second movement value is how far it moves when you treat it as terrain in a game where the terrain is moving. Basically, in the Marauders of the Rift, we saw rules for like chases, where like they're chasing, you're chasing ships. Ships are trying to flee and you're chasing them. And every turn you like move the scenery down the table, right? And like that's basically what you're using it for. So don't worry too much about it unless you're going to be playing that specific type of scenario. All right, so coming on down here. All right, so now we're talking about the R&D cruisers. I kind of touched on these before. Stats are very similar. I mean, very traditional stats. Damage rating 4, crit rating 7, movement 8. Nothing spectacular here. They have a cost of 60. Their main weapon is cyber warfare. They have port and starboard torpedoes. What's very cool that they added to these guys is that... oh, fuck, I'm full of shit. They don't have cloaking anymore. Interesting. No, what they have is they have stealth systems. Stealth systems is similar to the way it was before, but basically what it is that you have to re-roll all of your successful hits if you're shooting at these guys outside of 20 inches. That's what the MAR means now. So, cool. But I honestly would rather have cloak.
Yeah, no doubt.
Considering that I would just stay cloaked the entire game.
Yeah, and I mean, especially at 60 points per, because once you start looking at your minimum squadron size is 120, if you max them out to be 180, and the only really reason to do that is to start linking all the weapons, throwing out tons and tons of dice, 180 is like battleship size, and stealth systems might help some, but for battleship cost, that's when you're just like,
Well, I mean, cyber warfare has a range of 80, but it's still its most effective at range band 2. And that's why stealth systems is like, if I want to fire my best, I'm within range for them to come back and hit me, and stealth systems does nothing. At which point, I'm just a really fucking expensive cruiser with one extra hull point. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I don't know about that. I'm 50-50 on them now. You have the option to take decimator warheads and countermeasures, also plus 2 AP. But really, I mean, if you want to take a cruiser squadron that's going to do boarding actions, you're just going to take your standard cruiser squadron. There's no reason to take
these. Well, yeah, I mean, they only have 2 AP. Why would you?
Yeah, why would you upgrade it to 4?
Especially for 10 points.
Right, it's just cheaper to go with it. All right, so heavy cruiser. The heavy cruiser, not a battle cruiser, interestingly enough, so doesn't really fit into that patrol fleet thing that we were talking about. It just counts as a type of cruiser. So the heavy cruiser here. This one has also changed quite a bit, and it's changed in the way that it's 5 points cheaper. It still has the cloaking field, but it doesn't have turrets, and it doesn't have port and starboard weapons like it used to. It has gun racks. It's like the only thing in this fleet that has gun racks. And I think the reason why they did it that way is because it was modeled. It was modeled in such a way that you couldn't actually say that they had a 360 turret. So what they did is they said, okay, no, these guys have gun racks. But what I like about it is they've kept them as a hardcore boarding action type ship. Yes, you get to shoot a little bit. You can shoot one shot out of either side. They actually give you one additional dice to your weapons. So now you're doing 9 dice at 20 inches as opposed to 8. Which is really cool. So, I mean, it's extra dice that you're throwing out, squad of 2 to 3. The big thing is that you've got 5 AP for a ship, so that's 15 dice you can drop on one poor, poor, unsuspecting ship. The stats are basically the same. Let me just see if there's anything else changed here. No, I mean, the stats are exactly the same. What's super awesome is they do have the Reinforced 4 MAR now, and they also have the Special Forces MAR as a default. You can also give the gun rack beams a biohazard ammo as well, but considering the fact you're going to keep these guys cloaked pretty much the entire game, just save the 15 points that you would have spent on all 3 ships, buy upgrades elsewhere. All right. So, standard cruiser is 55 points. What you'll notice is a lot of these cruisers have gotten cheaper. So this cruiser's 10 points cheaper than it used to be. In the other fleets, you're going to notice that cruisers are a ton cheaper pretty much all the way across the board. What you see here is all they have is port and starboard torpedoes and a turret. What's super cool about this turret is that it's range band 1 and range band 2 are the same dice. It's just 8 dice, which is one more than they used to have. So already we're seeing that this cruiser is putting out more firepower for less points. It's getting the beam bonus. It's got Reinforced 4 as a MAR, which is super cool. You can pay 5 points more for biohazard ammo, which I would absolutely do. I think 60 points is totally great for these ships. And I think that that's where you start looking at the R&D cruiser and you start going like, yeah, but I'd rather just take a regular fucking cruiser. You know, like cyber warfare is super nice and I really like it, but like, come on, like these cruisers are great. You know, why would I piss around with anything else? And you can also give them Special Forces MAR for 5 points. So yeah, pretty nice. The destroyers, very similar, except for the fact that now they also can cloak. They have turrets, which is what they had before, except that, like any other destroyer, their weapons are better at range band 3 as opposed to range band 2. These also have stealth systems, so stealth systems and cloaking with the destroyer abilities are really, really cool. One of the interesting things that you'll notice is that there aren't actually destroyer abilities anymore. Certain destroyers just basically have the stats that allow you to do it, and some of them just don't. Some of them are just like, no, you fly around and you're stealthed and you're cloaked and nobody fucking cares, right? Whereas, like, for these ones, yeah, like, that's basically what you're getting. What you can take as an upgrade here is you can actually give the beam weapons the precision strike. The precision strike means that when you're rolling a targeted strike, you don't have to roll -1 to hit, which is super fun.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I think this is my favorite medium ship. Of them. I mean, it's 75 points is pricey. You're probably going to buy Precision Strike because it's 5 points. Why not? What's 10 points over your squadron size, right?
Right.
But the combination of cloaking with stealth and an ideal, like, optimal range of 30 inches means you're always able to stack those two abilities. You have a 0-inch turn limit, 9-inch move. Like, these fuckers are fast. They're agile. You're always going to be able to keep them at long range. So if anyone's trying to pot shot them to death, they're never going to do it. Not with both cloaks and stealth systems. Like, you have to dedicate some serious firepower at them just to take out 8 hull points worth of ships that cost you 160 points. Like, fuck yeah. Like, these guys are, like I said, I think my favorite of the medium ships for the Directorate so far.
Cool. Frigates. This is the last of it. The frigate has changed quite a bit as well. It also has a turret. This is one of 2 ships that actually are frigates and have turrets as an option. The strength of their weapons are about the same. They are beam weapons, just like everything else with the Directorate. Pretty much everything is beam. You can give the beams biohazard ammo, just like everything else that you can take beams in Directorate. So you start seeing like these really, really like recurring themes in these lists as we go through. What you'll notice here on the frigate is that there's a difficult target MAR. Difficult target is what they're giving as a MAR to small ships. If a ship has difficult target, it means that you are at -1 to hit them. So whereas before in the rules it said if a capital class ship, being large or medium, fires at a small ship, it needs a 5 or a 6 to hit instead of a 4, 5, or a 6. Now they're basically just giving you this rule. This is very important because certain weapons will have the scatter cohesive effect, which means it's basically like a shotgun blast type weapon. And if that's the case, they're just going to go ahead and hit...
hey, rookie, turn your
phone. Oh, my God. I know, right? It's fucking obnoxious. They're going to hit them on a 4+. So certain fleets are going to have a lot of bonuses for actually dealing with small ships like frigates. Reinforced 4, because what we've seen is that used to be damage rating 3, crit rating 6. Now it's only crit rating 5, but you'll get crit rating 6 if they're shooting you in the front. I think that these are super awesome, but they're also 5 points more expensive. And if you do the corrosive ammo, they're 30 points a piece, and that is fucking pricey for a frigate.
Especially if you max out your squadron sizes right. 4.
Yeah.
And the fact that frigates now are mandatory.
They are mandatory, exactly. So yeah, you may want to keep these slim and trim. Okay, so the hostility class drone. I think it was Daryl who said that he just thinks Directorate had the best names for their ships. I have to agree. This is the first drone that we've seen in the game. It's very straightforward. It's 25 points. It's got a damage rating of 4, crit rating of 6, which is actually really, really high for frigates. Most frigates don't have a damage rating of anything higher than 3. 0 crew, 0 AP, 1 point defense, 2 hull points. You can take them in a squad of 2 to 4. The only weapon that it has is a cyber warfare weapon on the front with a strength of 6 up close, 5 at every other range band. And it has the difficult target, unmanned, which is like if you board it, it auto dies kind of a thing. Like it doesn't ever lose crew because fuck crew, you know, stuff like that. And then what it also has is a MAR is the assault robot torpedoes MAR. We're basically...
Which, I mean, that wins the game, right? That there. Wins just the game. Just the name of that MAR.
Basically, the way that it works is that normally you don't get to roll point defense against cyber warfare, but in this case you do, because they are torpedoes. But if I do damage, you lose a crew point, and you have to roll on one of the targeted strike tables a D3. If I roll a crit, you lose D3 crew points, and I roll a D6 on the targeted strike table, but they don't do any actual hull damage. So keep that in mind when you're looking at picking these things up. I already have 8. I plan on taking 8, but they are absolutely one of those things where, yeah, this is one of the things where you use it to kind of nerf ships and really wear them down for the oncoming boarding assaults that are coming on down the line. All right, so the very last ship we have to talk about is the escort for the Directorate. Everything is basically the same. 3-point defense. You can take them in squads of 1 to 3. They're 15 points each. These are also unmanned now, which is very interesting. They're also like the drones. So they have 0 crew, 0 AP. But you can actually, for 5 points more, give them 2 assault points apiece. That means that you can add their assault points to the assault of like a dreadnought or a battleship. However, keep in mind that Special Forces is cohesive. So if you're going to link fire with your Special Forces, you're not going to get that bonus where you get the +1 to hit. So interesting options there. So that's the Directorate. So, I mean, what's your impressions of the Directorate as a whole, Nathan, now? Kind of looking at this idea of, like, an army of nothing but turrets flying around you.
Yeah, I think that it makes them really, really interesting. I think that, and no offense on this, but I think that they're going to be a really good beginner fleet. Because with turrets, you don't have to fuck around with movement. You're never going to have that turn where you're just like, I fucked it up. I can't shoot anyone. Shit, 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 shit. You know, you're never really going to have to worry about movement, specifically because unlike, you know, other fleets that have some turrets as a secondary, turrets are your workhorses.
Yeah.
You're not relying on torpedoes. You're not relying on fixed forward arcs like the Dendrenzi are, you know, but it's just like the fact of the matter is you are basically a 360-degree fleet, which is very, very interesting. And then you combine that with a lot of phenomenal assaulting. I mean, yeah, we know that assault has changed, but you still have tons of AP, special forces on anything super big. And even if you buy special forces for the dreadnought and you have, you know, you buy the AP on your escorts, yeah, you're right. You don't get your special forces, but who cares? You're getting 6 more dice. And then, remember, if you also bought Second Assault, the next time you do an assault because your escorts are dry, that's when you get to benefit from Special Forces, when you have this dice.
Yeah,
so I think that it is still worth doing, especially on the Directorate one, because what's the Dreadnought throwing out? 16 dice without it and then 10 with it, with Special Forces. So that's two assaults that you're going to win.
Yeah, absolutely. So. All right, so yeah, I agree there. I think absolutely they are going to be the best fleet for beginners who are just a little unsure with movement in the game. I know, I'll tell you right now, the Aquans are ridiculously maneuverable. Pretty much everything in their fleet has like a zero turn minimum. Like,
really?
Almost everything in their fleet turns like a frigate. It's fucking retarded. So like there are fleets that are just going to be like, oh yeah, you really want to talk beginner fleets. Like, I think Aquans are the true beginner fleet because they have weapons in every arc. Their torpedoes fire like turrets. They have ridiculously good movement, tons of mines. So like they're the fleet where like, doesn't matter what you do, they're working. I think Directorate are very interesting because they're the fleet that's is going to be the most effective at exploiting the weaknesses of whatever you're playing because of the fact that, you know, you have stuff that's relatively fast and decently maneuverable, but with the turrets, you know, he has to be very careful. One of the big changes in the new edition that we're going to see is that if you fire into the aft of any ship, they are counted as being -1 damage rating and -1 crit rating. So having turrets, especially when we talk about like a 4-man unit of like Directorate frigates, flying around, and then they're gonna come back and they're gonna throw, you know, they're gonna end up throwing like 20 plus dice. No, not 20. What am I thinking? Anyways, they're gonna end up throwing a mitt full of dice at the rear of pretty much everything that they're fighting because that's gonna be just the best place for them to be, right? And like it's gonna be really effective if we're talking about like, oh, well, they're gonna be softening stuff up with biohazard ammo. I think the fact that we see that Mar across the fleet is huge, but I love the fact that they made it an option. I love the fact that they're just like, yeah, you know what? You can absolutely do this. And if you want to go with a full-on assault fleet, this is the way to go. You pay the extra points and you weaken the shit out of their crew value so that you're just constantly taking and like capturing ships. Like, I think that that's totally awesome. But I love the idea that they're just like, hey, if you don't want to do that, you just don't have to fucking pay for it. You just saved yourself 50 points. You know what I mean? I think that's really cool. I love the idea that they're giving you all of these options and they're really, really giving the fleets a lot of different flavor. So yeah, I'm super happy with the Directorate. So anyways, that took a lot longer than we expected it would.
Indeed.
But I think it gives people a good idea of just the changes in general. And I think because they change the most out of any fleet, that's kind of more why it takes such a long time. Like if I bring up Dindrenzi right now, which is essentially your primary fleet,
yep,
that you've had some games with and stuff like that. So if you go ahead and bring that up as well, Nathan, you'll kind of see what I'm talking about. I don't want to skip too far, but they're making it a pain in the ass with this PDF. Okay, so what we see is that the natural allies for Dindrenzi is RSN. Mm-hmm. Ooh, surprise, surprise, right? But yeah, that's really, really cool. RSN, from what I've seen, are going to be super cool in the next edition. But yeah, let's take a look at just the Dreadnought, right? Because I think everyone, I'll tell you this right now, Dindrenzi really haven't changed. They're very, very straightforward. They're very similar. You'll see a couple of tweaks here in the options that you're given. But for the most part, what we're talking about on this Dreadnought is what you're going to see in pretty much everything. Okay? Mm-hmm. So starts off at 290 points, damage rating 7, crit rating 13. So already we're seeing that it's got a higher damage rating than the Directorate Dreadnought. Same crit rating, which is huge. Movement value of 7 already on a Dreadnought is fast as fuck. It has one additional hull point over the Directorate one. 8 crew, 5 AP, which is pretty low, and 7 point defense with a strength 6 mine. With a turn limit of 3.
See, oh, that was my God. Big part that I saw that I was just like, Jesus Christ. So basically, I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, turn. And then if I want to do a second turn, I'm either going to pay. Actually, if I want to do a second turn, I'm probably going to pay the 5 points for the +1 inch movement. because I think you're getting more bang for your buck than the 15 for the minus one turn limit. But still, a 3-inch turn limit. I was just like, yee.
All right. Primary weapon, gun rack. It's pretty simple. It's 11 at range band 2, which is 8 inches on a primary weapon. So, I mean, it's there, but you don't care about it. It's just kind of there. You're not really doing much with it. What's very, very interesting about this particular ship, and I think that this is the absolute, you see it everywhere throughout the Dindrenzi in the way that they've rewritten them. Kinetic weaponry on the 4. Kinetic weaponry works in range bands of 12. You have a fixed forward gun that is 12, 14, 10, 6, and then another fixed forward gun that is 12, 14, 10, 6. Double the firepower in one arc as opposed to 14 dice on a turret. You have to love the fact that they're just like, well, yeah, this thing is basically two guns glued together. It's two magnums glued together. You know, welcome to the future, punk-ass aliens. Like, that's basically what they're doing. And then they did the same thing for torpedoes, except they severely nerfed the torpedoes. They went from having 12 dice to 7 and 7, but they made it the same at all range bands, which I think is really cool. I didn't think you needed to have torpedoes that big.
No. Well, especially on that ship where it's just like, all right, I'm going to link the fire between my fixed forwards, and I'm going to throw 21 dice at something. So I'm really looking at double, triple crits against most things you're firing. Because with that many goddamn dice, that's absolutely the outcome you're getting. So when I'm already getting double, triple crits, why did I then need to link up and throw 18 torpedoes out?
Right.
I'm just like, Jesus Christ. So, I mean, I like the fact that the torpedoes went down because a lot of times your fixed forward, like just your kinetic weapons, they finished the job.
Well, that's what's really interesting about this. When we looked at the directorate ship, we saw that, you know, the turret was beam, but the other weaponry was all primary, which means that if you link, you're losing the beam cohesive effect. Mm-hmm. On this ship, if you link, you still get in your cohesive effect, which is kinetic. Now, kinetic, basically, if you roll a crit, when you roll the result of that crit on 2d6, you can choose to adjust the score by +1. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the other options that you can take as an upgrade for this ship is high energy kinetic weapons for 5 points extra, and that allows you to also have the option of adjusting it by -1. Which means that the chance of hitting them so hard that they fucking go nuclear is twice as, or it's more than twice as often now that you'll be rolling that result for 5 goddamn points on 21 goddamn dice. It's baffling just the amount of firepower that Dindrenzi are putting out right now. They really are heads and tails above everyone else on the table.
Well, that is true, but then you look at the fact that if it's not fixed forward, I've got really shitty gun racks. Like, that's the thing where it's just like, you know,
with a,
like,
shitty turning rate.
Oh, with the worst turn rate. You know, so that's the thing where it's just like, I think that's what they decided to do with this dreadnought is, you know, anyone that is coming straight at this dreadnought is fucking dead. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care if you are another dreadnought, I will double crit you. And with my high energy Mars, I'm rolling some serious fucking damage. Like, I will fuck up any ship coming straight at me. But as soon as you get around, I mean, like, I will struggle to make this ship useful even a little bit after that initial pass. And that the biggest reason for that is that 3-inch turn limit. So even if we're looking at it, if I'm really just trying to do what I can, my 3 hard points are always +1 move, -1 turn limit, and remove a blade of plating.
You're going Dr. Roboto on me.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say that I'm always having to dump a blade of plating, -1 turn limit, +1 move to try to make up for the fact that I turn like a fucking brick.
Right.
Which, what is with me playing fleets with no maneuverability? Fucking Star Trek Cardassian ships can't turn with shit. Dindrenzi dreadnoughts can't turn with shit.
Paint 'em brown, Nathan. Paint 'em brown.
Oh, my God. Really? But, like, that's the thing. So it's just like, I am always taking 35 points just to try to mitigate the built-in inherent weaknesses. So my basic
not even getting bonuses.
I'm just
fixing the problems.
Suck less. I'm paying 325 points. Always.
So a blade of plating.
That's what I'm going
to
get to.
Mm-hmm. A blade of plating is the big drawback of the Dindrenzi. Whereas every other fleet will get Mars that are very positive, that actually give them the flavor and give them positive things. This is the only fleet that has a negative Mar. A blade of plating, if a model with a blade of plating is reduced to less than half its starting hull points, its critical rating is reduced by 2. That means it goes from a crit rating of 13 to 11. This is crazy because this is on every ship. Like your cruisers, yeah, their crit rating drops to like 6. And then it's like, well, say goodbye to that guy. Yep. You can pay to remove it on a couple of ships, but not all of them. This is one of the ones where they do give you the option because it is your big home boat. But okay. It's crazy. You do have the option to take +3 wing capacity. You also have the option to change both of your forward torpedo weaponries to 4 as opposed to fixed 4, which is actually pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, both of those are decent. But again, my turn limit is such shit and my movement is so low. I mean, like, if I'm not buying any movement upgrades, as we said, I get one turn. Because I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, I'm going to turn, and then I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, and that's my movement. That is it. So it's just like, in order to have any chance of getting my big bad forward fixed weapons in the game for a second pass, I need to be more agile than it is. So 2 of my 3 hard points are always movement based, being the fact that I'm already dumping 310 points just on that. I'm obviously going to take a blade of plate, remove the blade of plating for the extra 15 points. And that's when you're looking at it, you're just like, I guess I'll pay 5 more points for high energy.
Yeah.
And I don't know what Protected Systems does, but I'm sure it's good, so I'll take 5 more points there. 335 without escorts.
Hold on, I'll tell you what Protective Systems does real quick here. Protected Systems. Subtract 1 from any rolls on the targeted strike damage table resulting from a direct weapons attack against the model with this. So basically, if they do a targeted strike on you, they're never going to roll a 6, which is really good because 6 is the one you never want them to roll on a targeted strike.
And for 5 points, fuck yeah, son.
Yeah, why not?
You're never going to split fire for your gun racks because they're already throwing out pitiful amounts of dice. Then why would I ever want to split that in half?
Right.
So like I said, it's just like, that's the thing. So it's like, I'm looking at my dreadnought and without any escorts, because I haven't even looked to see what my escorts can add yet.
It's pretty much the same.
I'm paying
like I said,
335.
You're really not seeing a lot of changes across the Dindrenzi outside of the fact that they have a blade of plating and like no other Mars. It's all going to be fixed forward torpedoes, all going to be fixed forward kinetic weaponry with a very paltry gun rack. And that's pretty much what you're going to see across the board. You're also going to see that their maneuverability is just not there. They're very fast, but they do not have the maneuverability. So in a lot of cases, you're going to be trying to hit as hard as possible in the opening turns and then kind of get around to dealing with them later. These guys are the glass cannons. However, unlike Cardassians, it's not like they just have a slightly better gun that other people have better guns. No, these guys have the best guns, the longest range guns. They hit you from across the table turn 1, and they continue to ravage the shit out of you every turn.
Well, yeah, like that's the thing is I'm just like looking at this, you know.
All things shoot 48 inches. Like, just get used to it.
Well, and that's exactly it. Is I'm like, and throwing 9 dice at 4 feet means I'm going to move a little bit, and I'm going to be putting some serious.
You're going to take your time, right?
Size. Yeah, I'm absolutely going to take my time because I know that the one turn that I get into that range band 2, I got to make it count, and then I got to be clever with my movement so I can still double up range band 1. Because you know what. 18 dice is not significantly worse than 21. I'm still going to fuck your face in. But once, you know, but if you're playing against Dindrenzi, you know you got to hit the gas. You need to get fucking behind them. And I think that the, you know, our fight of Directorate versus Dindrenzi is losing for me because all you have to do is power behind me.
I got
to
burn past you, yes.
Yeah, you got to burn past, and then you've got a 360 line of fire. You're also a hell of a lot more maneuverable than I am because your turn limit should be down to 1 inch to my 2 inches. So it's just like, you're going to burn past me. And after that, you're behind me. And even my gun racks can't hit you there. So I'm going to be dropping mines. Sure. But you're getting better damage on me. Like it's a hard, I think it's going to be a really uphill fight.
Now the big saving the big saving grace for you is that your cruisers still have a turn limit of one, and yes. your escorts still hit very hard, and they still have all that speed. You know, you have your fixed forward kinetic weapon on your cruiser for 60 points. You know, you don't even have to take the upgrades because the only upgrade is like secured bulkheads, which I don't think you even fucking need on a cruiser. But really, it's like the nice thing about the cruisers is their torpedoes are four instead of fixed forward. So you still have enough maneuverability with your cruisers to support your big ships. It's really only your big ships that are just going to be turning like bricks, and you're going to have to deal with those. Yeah. However, do keep in mind that those Gladius gunships that you love so much turn rate of two.
It's true.
But yeah, when you look
at Gladius gunships are fucking, they're still mean.
Yeah. Your hammer class frigates, they actually went up to a fixed forward kinetic weapon of strength six at range band two instead of strength five. So they're hitting a little harder than they used to. They're still a difficult target. They still have, but even your fucking frigates have a turn limit of one. God, I love it. It's fucking hilarious. But yeah, you do have Corvettes
now. But movement 11, they're getting where I need them to be.
Right, well, like, you do have Corvettes now, right? And those were just released in like, the previous couple releases before this. Oh,
wow, turn up at zero with 14-inch moves?
Yeah, man, Corvettes are fast as fuck. So, like, you've got Corvettes, like, and you can bring out a squad of four Corvettes. Like, yeah, they're not turning out a ton of firepower, but they also have Pack Hunters. So they're adding, like, an extra three dice to whatever your total is from your turrets, right? And the way that Link Fire works now, a turret strength of five at range band one is pretty goddamn tough. So yeah. Anyways, I mean, that's kind of giving you guys a taste of what we're going to be seeing for Firestorm Armada. Obviously, we'll kind of talk about the other fleets as we get a chance. I don't suspect that we're going to have a whole ton of stuff to talk about leading up into December, other than we'll probably have 2-3 weeks worth of Tyranid stuff that we'll be talking about eventually. But yeah, craziness.
Honestly, I don't think I've ever been more excited to get into Firestorm. And at this point, I'm just like, do I finally pay my Dindrenzi, or do I just say fuck it and go grab the those beautiful new Reloza? Because those fuck you, there is no Reloza. TH. Actually, if you actually, oddly enough, look at the picture of the patrol fleet. Even Spartan Games misspelled it to Reloza because they think we are we're better.
Yeah, yeah. True, very true. And I'll tell you this right now, Nathan. Reloza. The Reloza basically are cheaters.
Oh my god, yeah. I'm looking at
because it. Because like, they're all cloaked. And they all have stealth systems. You can give the big ships self-repair. That means in the end phase of every turn, you roll a dice and you can repair hit points. And
comes with that bitch stock.
They have no MAR for their weapons. Their weapons are all primary, which means they are very short-ranged, right? Their main weapons are all very short-ranged. But with the changes to torpedoes being like across-the-table stuff, when you're cloaked, you're going to be shooting torpedoes as your main gun anyway, so you don't really even care. But every single one of them has the option to make their primary weapon corrosive.
Oh, I see that. And everything they have is primary.
Yeah. Very, very cool. Honestly, out of all of them, I think that the Rothosa come out on top. I think that they really are just that's going to be the fleet that's just going to be such a pain in the ass to play. And they're just going to make your life a living hell every single time somebody puts them on the table. And with those new models, God, we're going to see them. We're going to see them all over the place.
Well, I said, honestly, that new patrol fleet is stunning. I have never, like, if they looked like that out of the gates, they would have been my fleet.
Yeah.
Hands down. Because I think they'd have been your fleet, too.
I'd have still gone with Directorate. I love my saucers. I love my flying saucers, sucker. Oh, God, man. Oh, something shiny. Well, not shiny. It's kind of sad. Paul Walker died. Indeed. Paul Walker died today, which was unfortunate because I don't think there's anybody in the world who doesn't like Paul Walker.
It's the eyes.
And my wife, the first thing I said is like, please tell me he didn't die in a car accident. It's like, yeah, he died in a car accident driving a supercar. And it's like he was driving it. I think he was in a passenger seat.
But, yeah, he was the passenger. His friend was driving it.
Very, very sad, but also very ironic. And I don't think anybody does not see the irony. But it's totally awful because I love Fast and the Furious movies. Maddie and I, frequent host on the show, Maddie is like, we love going to watch Fast and the Furious and just laughing our asses off for like an entire fucking movie. And just enjoying the shit out of it. And so, yeah, I was very sad to hear that he died in such a horrible way. That's just the worst thing.
Well, I was going to say, I think this means they may have to, like, give Tyrese Gibson the call back in if they want to make, like, Fast 7.
He was in the last one, man.
Oh, was he? I saw.
Yeah, he's been in, like, the last two, man.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
And last one I saw was 4, which was terrible. Even Riff Tracks couldn't make it better.
I remember we were talking about this where I was just like, dude, we need to sit down and watch all three in one night. And you're just like, let's do this. And your wife was like, fuck both of you. Why are we even talking about this? And I'm like, Terry, you don't even understand how fucking good Fast and the Furious
is. Look, it is Twilight for guys. I totally get it. So that good. Is fine.
It's so amazing. Speaking of Twilight for guys, are you trying to order your own Dorian sex bot?
Oh, that's... Wow, that they have moved fast if those are available already.
No, they're not available yet. It's just, you know, pre-orders, right?
All right, I am Googling this. This is the first I've heard of it.
I made it up, dude. It's not real. But Google,
I am still Googling it to see.
I'm enjoying Almost Human. I mean, it's fun. My wife is like, it's boring. They're going to cancel it. And I'm like, it's just a cop drama in the future, right? But I will say this. My big problem with it right now is that there is no overarching story. Like, they've already gotten past the I hate goddamn robots bit. Like, they got past it in the first episode. So it's like, clearly that's not the crux of this show is Carl Urban hates robots.
Well, I think
it's like, no, they're already
the syndicate from the, you know, the syndicate, the ex-girlfriend, everything that they did in the pilot, I think is what's going to come around again.
Well, clearly that
however,
is, that's
you
the
have,
hook.
Yes, I was going to say, but you have to remember though, that with Fox, they're all about like, no, you just have to hook people. You know, you want to make it so if they've missed episodes, it doesn't fucking matter. And I wouldn't expect, any sort of major, like, season-long plot to kick in until about episode 10. Because we do know that Almost Human was signed for a full season, wasn't it? Yeah. And looking at the fucking production budget, it's no wonder. Yeah, like, really. Did you, the first thing we saw at the very beginning of the last episode when his, like, alarm clock floated up, and you're just like, what an unnecessary special effect. Like, why did
it's the future.
Right? But, like, you know, again, like, they are spending some serious money on it. We know we're getting a full season. I think right now Fox is still just playing it safe, which is why everything is going to be very episodic. We're not even going to hear about the syndicate again until about the midway mark of the season when the writers finally get a chance to ramp it back up.
They're not even called syndicate. They're called like in syndicate or something, aren't they?
I don't know.
Something weird like that. I don't know. But anyways, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying a lot of TV, but now it's like break time for holidays. So nobody's actually like running television shows anymore. So now I just like starve and go back and watch Star Trek again.
Well, yeah, I mean, I finally got to the start of the Dominion War through all of my rewatching.
Hey, there you go.
That was the season finale of season 5. And I was just like, really? This major war only lasted 2 seasons?
Yes, it did. It only lasted 2 seasons because like that in DS9, like that was the time when they figured out that Star Trek fans had lost interest in the idea of these one-off story plots. You know, like TV had just gone away from these serialized types of, you know, what's on the other end of the Stargate this week? You know, like people just, they were done with it. And nobody really likes that kind of television anymore, except for old people. And they're totally content with CSI. So you're never going to pull them in.
Right.
So, I mean, like, it's one of those things where I think this is when TV had gotten to the point where it was like, no, shows that are making it are like X-Files. Shows that are making it, you know, are shows that are giving you these ongoing stories that are developing and like, you know, really just, you know, trying to pull people in and make stuff happen. And I think that that's why, you know, at that point in DS9, they were just like, right, you know, we need a plot. Like, we need a big plot. It can't just be, what are the founders, or not the founders, the fuck are the goddamn wormhole aliens called?
Prophets?
No. Sisko's a prophet.
No, he's the emissary. God, watch your
emissary. Sorry. Are they called emissary prophets? Emissary of the prophets.
I have just watched like four straight seasons of the show over the last like month. So, like, trust me, they are the prophets.
All right, fair. I think they just got to the point where they're just like, yeah, nobody gives a shit about the prophets anymore. Like, we don't need to see Sisko having visions
anymore. Oh, God. Yeah, like, that's the thing is, I'm like, if it's a Bajoran episode or it focuses on, like, Kira, you're just like, this is going to be terrible.
You are just at the Dominion Wars, which means that hopefully in the next couple of episodes, you will finally get the joke that I've thrown at you like 10 times that you've always just missed, where I go, it's a fake.
Okay.
You'll get there. You'll get there.
All right. Now there are high expectations.
Trust me, it pays off like you would not believe. As soon as it happens, you'll just be like, oh my God, Lang was right. It is a fake. That's been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.